This is the Filmmaking the Hard Way podcast. I am Josh Folan, and as always the case, today I'm speaking with a talented filmmaker in the low to micro budget filmmaking space. This particular chat was with Nathan Morris about his role directing a 13 minute and some change short titled My Eyes Are Up Here that is being featured on the Filmmaking the Hard Way Filmmaker Spotlight series, which is my little way of celebrating filmmakers that are accomplishing a lot with a little.
I always ask, what was your first dollar that you earned, entertainment related? What were you doing? What was it for? How did you get the gig?
That's a really good question. Yeah. First dollar, I started my first job. I got really lucky. This cable TV company from America came to New Zealand.
Okay.
And they started, I think, there's no cable TV in New Zealand at that time, and they laid down the cables, obviously. And they, I think they had to start a community TV channel called On TV.
Okay.
Pretty good name. I got a job working for them. And it was probably a dream first job. You had to make four-minute stories a week.
Okay. So you were actually making your own stuff, like directing?
Yeah, but no one watched it. Like, okay. I'm like, literally.
That doesn't matter.
I'm not exaggerating.
Who watches anything these days?
Right. Actually, no one watched it. So it was one, cable was just starting. I think it failed in New Zealand, and they had the screen on each channel, and we had to make four-minute stories a week.
Okay.
Which was great. You got a car, a camera, and an edit suite. You had to share it.
Okay.
With a bunch of other people.
That's a hell of a training ground too. Yeah.
Fucking great. So it was like, go make a story on anything in the community. So it was like, all right, I'll go do a story on that Joe Jr.
So like kind of like quasi news reporting.
It was more like, you remember like early 2000s Vimeo, there was so many like little documentaries on a guy who makes swords or a guy who could do. So like, there was news segments, but there was we did like
just human interest pieces.
Yeah, just like how do you make the Krona in the 2000s and shit.
Word.
So yeah, it was fun.
That's it makes me think of, you ever watched what is it, How To with John Wilson?
I love that show.
Oh, so fucking good. So good.
It wasn't as good as that.
It's tough.
But it was a great first job.
Yeah, for sure.
You learn how to fuck everything up.
Yeah, in a low-risk environment, for sure. Yeah.
No one watched, not even my mother. Seriously.
Did you at least tell her about it, or were you so protective? No, yeah, you told her you were doing it?
Yeah. Okay. I'm still friends with people from it.
Okay.
And we got, because we found we'd cheat, I started presenting a show because it was easier than making it, just talking on camera. Mm-hmm. About art, and then we actually sold that to one of the networks in New Zealand, and it did quite well.
Amazing.
Won a bunch of awards.
Very fucking cool. Okay, so with the film, My Eyes Are Up Here, give me your elevator pitch at this point. I love doing this too, so late in the game with like your festival run and shit that you've had to do this a million times. Oh. So that can go two ways. That can either be, have it really developed and sorted out, or you're so far removed from it at this point that it's almost anew. You're trying to put it together again.
Yeah, and I'm not a real, like, I'm not a, pitching freaks me out.
Well, you've already sold it. It's not a pitch. Don't think of it like a pitch.
Yeah.
That's poor verbiage, probably.
What is
I
it?
Need to change that.
It's a film here. About, it's a very simple premise. A girl has a one-night stand. We've all been there, I hope. And you wake up and you're like, I've got to get away from this guy / girl, whatever. We've all been there, probably. And it's the story up here. And they find out the condom's got a hole in it. And you've got to get to the morning after, get the morning after pill. And it's that journey. The guy really likes her, so he tags along and she wants to get rid of him. And she's in a wheelchair. So it's pretty simple on the surface. It's pretty simple. But there's lots more stuff going on. And it's a rom-com.
Right.
Word. Yeah.
Okay, and then so.
How much do I get the win?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Yeah, oh, I think, yeah, sold. How much money do you need?
don't ask.
So, how would you describe your roles on it?
Dickhead.
Yeah?
I kind of pulled it all together. So, I found the script, I helped rewrite it, found the producer. We found funding and then directed it and co-cut it and did a lot of stuff and kind of sort of produced it. I mean,
as it goes.
Don't tell the producers. I did a lot, but yeah, at the beginning it was like pulling everything together and making.
How did you source that the script?
I had a meeting in New Zealand. I was talking about this today, actually, and I felt like a fucking erect nipple on a ball. I was just like, so I went to New Zealand Film Commission and I had nothing to say and nothing to give them. And I was like, hi. And they were like, hi. And I was like, hi. And they were like, well, nice to meet you. And I was like, was it? And then they were like, oh, you should meet our mutual, I've got a friend who lives near you. Go say hi to him. He's a writer. And I was like, cool, I like writers. And then I had a really awkward meeting with him. Saw the script. I made him give me the script. I was like, show me what you got. And then I loved it and was like, please let me make this. And then had to convince him and the other writer that I was...
That, so it's two co-writers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's like the best fucking, I don't know, example ever of always take the meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, always take the meeting. Even if you don't fucking know why you're taking it, just take the fucking meeting. You never know.
I have to remind myself of that sometimes. Because you feel like a dick turning up. And you just like, you just want people to know you exist. But hi.
Yeah.
But it worked out really well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah.
Very cool.
We'll cut this bit out. If you're listening to this, something's gone very wrong.
Or the editor was lazy, one or the other.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, you went, was it BFI? What was the funding organization?
So we were really lucky. Well, it was a lot of work to get funding. I think it probably took longer than 2 years. But the funding we ended up securing, which we were really lucky to get, was BBC Films and British Film Institute, BFI. So
it was a co thing.
Yep.
Okay.
And we got some private investors as well, who are lovely and don't want to be mentioned. So shh.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I certainly have plenty of those. Almost all of them are that way, usually. I can't convince anyone who actually responsibly invests in film to continue to do it. So all my entire investor Rolodex is like crazy-ass fuckers that just have too much money, don't know what to do with it. And they definitely don't want their name on anything.
Right, I don't want anyone to know.
Right.
So, the hardest bit, finding the money? I mean, getting a good story is the first.
Yeah, I mean, bit. Yeah, I would say that's certainly the hardest thing, I think. But yeah, I mean, you know, I've been doing this shit for over 15 years now. You know, and I come from finance, like my background's business finance. So I came into this from like a small, I haven't lived in this world until I kind of fell into it. So I have this like perspective that, you know, I know that it doesn't make money. And like for the longest time, I've never sat down with an investor and the first thing I've said not been like, this needs to be money you can lose. You know what I
mean?
It needs to be expendable in your life. There needs to be another reason you are wanting to involve yourself financially with this product other than return, because these things don't probably do that. So you need to be investing in some emotional way, or there needs to be something else there for you. I can't even get myself to do that anymore. I can't even, like, even that's a lie to me now. I know it's not going to make money. So in this budget realm anyways, you know, which I do a ton of like 250 to a million things, and it's next to impossible, you know. And even if you look at like, I mean, Sundance put out a really cool study like a year or two ago now, and like legitimately it's just a dead zone between like 50,000, like really really low micro things can make their money back if they hit the right notes, you know, and then one point, you know, above seven figures and above, like that, the space between is a fucking financial profitability dead zone, you know. So I know that, and that is where most of the stuff, that's what I'm good at. So a lot of the work that comes to me is in that realm, and I know that we're not gonna probably make money, you know. So I don't do a lot of fundraising anymore because I know it's a lie, and I'm too fucking old and too brutally honest to sit down and tell someone anything other than the 100% brute truth that this, you're never going to see this money again, you know?
Yeah.
If you're lucky, you're going to see a small portion of it back. But yeah, you're never going to see all
that. That's a bad pitch.
That is a bad pitch. Although, it's rich people don't get told shit like that very often. And if they do have another reason to want to put money into something beyond financial returns, it gets their attention because they don't hear it a lot.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, this guy's straight up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's the private investor. I've never asked money from a private investor before. And because it's quite an important story told in a fun way, I think. Or, you know, lots of able-bodied people Yeah, I don't want to be preachy, but you know, like it's got, there's value to it, you know, and I think that really helps.
Well, that's, I mean, I told you that's what resonated with me is that, like, you know, you're, I love anything where you're getting this like slice of life that you don't even think about, let alone actually have insight into, you know. Yep. And that's the beautiful thing about it is, yes, it's like the simplest premise, but for an extraordinary participants, you know what I mean? And that's what I think really resonated, I'm sure, with far more than just me, but you know, definitely with me.
No, so, it's just you.
Yeah.
It's just you.
Just me,
so
yeah.
Thank you.
That's how we got here.
I need this. Yeah. No. Yeah, that's the best thing about film, I think, is you can tell something that looks like a bullshit story, and underneath there's this important, I'm using air quotes, important like message that you want to get out. Yeah.
So that, I've never done that, and I imagine most people haven't done that route to financing, not the private investment part, but the BFI and BBC backing. So kind of, can you, like you said, it took you 2 years, so I'm sure there's far more than you could ever possibly tell me in this fucking setting, in the short amount of time we have, but like, kind of an abridged version of what the flowchart of that is and how
it was really hard. Well, originally we tried, I don't want to piss off any people.
Obviously, yeah, you don't have to tell me anything that you can't talk about, but...
But yeah, it's a lot of, because we applied to New Zealand, because you use what you've got, right? I'm a Kiwi, and there's funding at home, and the idea with the funding at home being New Zealand, being like, we want to support New Zealand filmmakers wherever they're based around the world, and try and support them and make more film. I mean, Taika's brought in millions of dollars into the country, you know, and they paid for his first short film. So I actually applied to them initially, and it's a lot of... heavy lifting, a lot of documents, what are you trying to say, why are you going to say it, how are you going to say it, what's the script, like a load of shit that it was quite difficult, but it was also really good. It was like going to school on your own film,
right,
and
exactly.
Having someone else being like, alright kid, what you got? And we got denied twice, and it's really disheartening, but like every film making podcast you've ever heard, that's part of it. I actually kept saying to myself, well, this will be fun for the podcast. So here we are. But because it's like you get to the final, and they'll be like, no, fuck off. And they'll be like, ah, it's the worst.
So is it like a tier getting through like steps of like, okay, this group
to
or
the
this...
short list, yeah, the long list and a short list, right. And then you get a bit of gossip saying you're going well. But anyway, so that was new. So we, and then the BBC grant was a similar thing. Similar process, similar...
Did you, was it a completely separate endeavor, or did it...
Well, for a while, we were trying to combine them. Say, like, if you guys give us money, and I'm not a producer, and if New Zealand gives us money, you guys are cool, right? Because people want to make good things as well, and they want to... Like, the BBC love New Zealand Film Commission. It's like a... They should get a room. you know, like, they want to be seen to be making films together. So that was almost like enticing for them, going to New Zealand... we might be able to get the BBC on board, and then the BBC, we might be able to get New Zealand. And it wasn't bullshit. We were talking to both of them. But then New Zealand went with some other fuckers.
Okay.
And, you know, great filmmakers and great. No. Pseudo-joking. But then we just kept talking to the BBC, and I went and had a meeting with them. And it was just as COVID was happening. And I'm not good at pitching, and I'm not good at selling, unless I really, really, really believe in it. And I had to... Things were kicking off. I can't really go into it. But anyway, I had like 15 minutes to give this pitch to this guy, the head of funding, and I just sat in the room with him and was like, this is my only shot. And I just went into sales mode and just was like, blah, blah, this is good, and this is why it's important, and this is why I believe in it. And it was really, when I stopped, I was like, whoa, did I just do that? Did I say that? And he was like, sounds great, we'll be in touch. And I was like, I gotta go. But I did truly believe it. And all that work with the New Zealand thing, it all consolidated it. And I had it really clearly in my head. Because I think when they don't get funding, they feel pissed off. And I'm like, yeah, be pissed off. But you've actually done a lot of really good work
on the project, sure.
Yeah, so it's actually... So yeah, it was really hard, a few meetings, and then when they approved it, they were like, right, let's rework the script. And I was just like, and that was really hard.
That's really surprising to you. I'm surprised to hear that those kind of like higher level arts foundations try to get their fingers into it like that. I would have guessed that they were more kind of like, we're funding you, we're funding the filmmaker, and your vision. Go make your thing, you know?
Yeah,
I'm surprised to hear that they're more hands-on than that.
I think because they don't get... It's government-funded, and they don't get a lot of money, so they're, like, really scared of spending it. And, you know, I hadn't directed a lot of drama. They're scared of fucking up and losing their jobs. Everyone's on the line. They're like, all right, we're giving this guy X amount of money. And they're juniors. It's kind of backwards. I've got, like, juniors at the BBC, and they were great. Trying to earn their way and step up as well, and commissioners and stuff. So everyone's trying to, and they're nervous. And then, like, it's the worst pairing, like a new director with a new commissioner. So it's like,
extra unsure of making decisions. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like two people that can't swim going out kayaking, and their life jackets are lost. But everything, they were really lovely. And again, I think the more development, even though I find it quite hard to disagree with stuff. Filmmaking is a lot about, you know, communicating your idea. And when you're saying let's do X and they're saying let's do Y, and there's no right or wrong, it's objective. I find it quite hard to be like, softly, gently, let's do X. I'm like, no, Y's stupid, let's do X. But so that was another skill that I'm still learning in life.
Working with the client.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't think that ever goes away. So it's a good...
Right. I mean, yeah, if you have a strong... If you're predisposed to having a strong vision in the first place, like someone telling you your idea should be different is a fucking hard skill to get good at.
For sure. It's good to be pushed. Like, I'm working on a script now and I got this feedback and they're like, that sucks. I'm like, does it?
Yeah.
And really, like... be on their side for a minute and then be like, oh, they're right, or no, they're not.
Yeah.
But to question
just
everything.
To hear the question though and think about it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay, so that's BBC, and then how does BFI come to that? Do they always kind of turn and say, do you guys want to take a look at this?
Or? I think the BBC films were like, we don't have enough money to do it properly, but we can give you this much. Can you, because they all talk to each other, can you, maybe the BFI will give you. It's really exciting, really dramatic.
A man, payment issue.
A man just stabbed a rabbit. It's not a real rabbit. They said maybe go to the BFI. We like it. We can only give you X. And we were like, well, we can't make it for X. And they were like, talk to the BFI and say you've got money from us. So it snowballed.
Okay. So, but you had to kind of be the inciter of that.
I think they introduced us.
Okay.
Like the producer I got on board is really good at this shit. And I'm really dumb at it. So, yeah, I think they introduced us, then we got chatting. Yeah.
Couldn't get home.
Cool. Okay, so nuts and bolts with this shoot. How many shoot days? How many script pages? Let's do one at a time. How many shoot days?
It was meant to be 4.
Okay.
And it was 5.
Copy. How many script pages?
Is it 14 or 15?
14, copy. Number of speaking roles?
Oh, Jesus. The two main actors, there's the guy and the chemist, there's mum, there's two girls on the bus, that's 7. I think, is that it? 7?
Maybe-ish. Okay, word. And then how many, this may be a spitball because it's an average, but the daily crew headcount that you were working with?
I hate big crews. Anything more than 7, I'm like, ugh. I think it's like 30.
Okay.
That was reasonably big.
Yeah.
Bigger than I'd like it.
That's definitely, even, I mean, yeah, that's more indie feature size than like 4 day short.
Between 25, 30. Yeah. Working with that funding, they were like, you need to do things in a certain way. You need to pay everyone full rates at this thing. So the funding.
Did they have even like departmental staffing numbers? Not just rates, but even like, okay, you need to have 2 people in makeup or...
No, but... the producers did shield me a little bit from bullshit.
Okay.
So maybe, but okay. Not to my knowledge.
Copy.
But yeah.
And then number of locations?
Bedroom, steps, bus street, more streets, chemists,
pharmacy.
We call them chemists.
Yeah.
I love it in America, like drugs. let's get drugs. And then street. So like 5, 6, they're
okay,
actually
work.
Really hard to get.
Okay. And this, you said you may have been shielded from this, but this is a hyper-specific one that for some reason I want to know. The budgeter in me always wonders this question. Meals. How did you take care of meals, and how much were they per plate? This is more of a producer question that you may not know the answer to.
I don't know.
Okay.
It's funny. I was showering today, and I was thinking about the catering. Because it was...
So was that good?
Yeah, it was that good.
Yeah,
nice. It was really... Nice. No, I remember I went to a cafe and brought a bunch of food, because I was like, we can't eat this.
Okay. So
I don't know if we should stay
actually
there.
Wasn't good. Okay.
That was shit. I don't know.
Food's important, man. Especially, if you're paying well, it's less important. But when you're paying super low, you gotta feed them right.
No, so. That's why I went around. I finished shooting and I went and looked at the food and I was like, I don't know if we should put this in. I was like, people have been up since 4 a.m. We can't eat this. I mean, we can, but. And I went to Pret and spent $100 and
got up some shit. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer, like, you can't be munching on the stomach and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
So the timeline. I mean, it's long out now, so where it is done. But when did it start?
It took 5 years.
Yeah?
5 fucking years.
From the start of going out to
from
the New Zealand Film Commission?
Meeting after, reading the scripts, convincing them, finding producers. No one wanted to make it with me for a while. I was sending it to producers, and they were like, no. Even Katie, who did it, she was like... No. A month later, she was like, actually, I really like it, which I love. I didn't push her. She came back.
Right.
So 5 years.
She actually thought about it. It's a good signal that she actually thought about it.
Yeah. And then COVID hit. So that slowed it down. And you're working with immune compromised people. So you can't shoot. Even when we shot at the end of COVID, it was a bit scary.
So when the shoot was when?
When did COVID finish?
Depends where you're at, probably as far as the answer to that question.
22, right?
Yeah, I mean, it like, in 21, it had that, like, spring fucking recession and then fired back up towards the tail end of the year.
I think it was, like, January, December 21.
Okay.
I'm guessing. I could look.
Yeah, not that important.
And then post took forever. And then working with BBC and BFI, everyone wants to... give notes, and also working with Aminda, the other writer who's disabled, it was a really eye-opening experience for me, because every month she would be in hospital for a week, she would be down, she as in like can't work, her life is hard, and that slowed it down immensely as well, and it was like hard for me, but in different ways, but it was also like, oh fuck, superficially hard for me, but for her it was like...
So the writer was also disabled, okay.
Yeah, so it's based on her real experiences. All of this has happened to her, not on one day.
Sure, but an imagination.
Yeah, and that was really great.
Well, there you go, that's why the fucking authenticity is there as well, so beautiful. Most notable constraint, and I mean, money is obvious, that would be obvious answer to pretty much every filmmaking scenario, but... What did not having enough or a more ideal amount of money take away from you in your view that you wish you'd have had? Or you regret not having the most, maybe?
Well, money is time on a film.
Sure.
You got lots of money, you can shoot for longer and prep for longer. But what's the question? What made it most...
What was the most notable constraint? Like I said, money in some way, shape, or form is going to be the answer, but kind of I'm digging at here more about what not having more money prevented you from having at your disposal that you... I mean, it can't be as simple as time, you know?
Well,
but
the trickiest thing, like the character in the movie, whatever, Ben, Tom... I always get the actor name and the characters, they're very similar. Anyway, he learns what disability is like and how tough it is. As filmmakers, we were learning how tough it is to work on a film set with people with disabilities and the extra challenges. You find a location and you're like, this is perfect, it looks good, blah, 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 we can afford it and it's available. And then you get there and the toilet door isn't wide enough for the wheelchair to go through. And you're like, the fuck? Or... So we can't use that, and then you go around.
Especially in London too. I've never been, but I presume it's very New York-like, and everything's kind of makeshift and
even more
bold and jammed.
Even more, everything's. And then you'd find another location. You could afford it. It was free. I had the right look. Like, finding locations on a budget's tough. But then it was like there was no ramp for the wheelchair to get up. So the toughest thing, we mirrored his experiences in the film, which is really great. and interesting, but really tough. Like, I was out at like midnight the night before the first day of the shoot, looking for somewhere to shoot in the rain by myself. And I had like 5 a.m. call time. I was like, what the fuck? We didn't have a location, so we lost it because it couldn't fit. It wasn't accessible. So the toughest thing was...
Which location was that?
It was the fucking... just the stairs for the steps, ramp, which was just like, you'd think that'd be easy. Originally, they were meant to be going up from somewhere, but we had to change them down. And you'd think that'd be easy, but it was just like impossible to find. But we did it. Just. I mean, that's...
So even like the apartment, was the apartment like a first floor thing?
Apartment was first floor. We were really lucky to find that. But that was after a... But you'd find something great, and then there'd be... But it, accessible issues, which goes to the film's, what it's trying to say is... Society
how fucking
accessible
hard this shit is, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, oh yeah, we get it. Yeah. So it was...
Did you have, other than Jillian, did you have any other...
Yes.
Disabled? Okay.
Because that was a big thing on getting the money. Because it's quite interesting to me, like, working with Aminda, the writer, disabled writer and artist. Disabled people don't get the same opportunities as us. It's really fucking hard to get opportunities in film. I'm a white, able-bodied, straight guy, and I find it tough. So other people have it way tougher than me. And then think of disabled people, like, fuck. So I said, like, where we can, we will give a disabled person a job. But further to that, where they can't do the job because no one's given the opportunity, they are on set and they're learning from someone, they're shadowing people. So we had, like, 4 or 5 people on set with disabilities, shadowing team heads, and our photographer was deaf. So we had a bunch of disabled people.
Okay,
none in a wheelchair, but yeah. So.
Still a consideration, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of the flip side of that. So that same constraint often will lend itself to creating a benefit that you did not expect or see coming, because of some sort of decision. Like, you know, it may be also a great example. You're out, so you lose that location because of accessibility, and then the one that you end up scrambling for last second turns out to be probably better serving for the film anyways than what you originally had planned.
Right.
Not saying that's the case, just as an example. What did not having what you ideally would have wanted resource-wise create for the better on the project?
There's a couple, I think the most fun one, on the bus day. Because filming on a bus, that took a lot of budget, because we needed a bus. On the first day, the bus driver drove into a wall, which was really funny, but also really... I started smoking. I was so stressed. The bus broke down. He drove into
was
a
it,
wall.
Was it like an actual city bus that gave you one of their drivers, or was did the you bus, rent the bus and then you got a driver of your own?
He came with the bus. He should have known how the wheels went round and round. But drove into a wall, and then it overheated. So the day on the bus, and then it got dark outside. And I remember the producers, the crew were all upstairs, and I was shooting downstairs, and I went upstairs. And I'm pretty good at getting by, making shit happen. I've been in some shitty situations before. And it was getting dark, and I'm like, I think we've lost the day. And that's like really stressful. People have paid for it and everything's gone wrong. And she's like, you have to make it work. And the DP was like, we can't, like there's lights on. So I can't fake like street lights. And I was like, can I shoot it? And she goes, yeah, take the camera. And I started shooting stuff and I was just like, this won't cut. I can't. And I went back upstairs and went, and the bus was could only go like 10 miles an hour.
And it was after, like, the record, before the record?
After the record. After and I was like, really loud. And I was like, I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Yeah.
And she was just like, the producer was like, yeah, we've got to call it. But then, because of that, and because we had funding, insurance paid for another shoot day. So that shoot day turned into a really, really, really great rehearsal day.
Amazing.
So it was all blocked, knew where the camera was, and then so we got an extra day, thankfully, okay. Got the bus back. Same driver, I think. And shooting on a bus is really hard, but because we had that rehearsal, it was easier. It was still difficult.
Than it would have been.
Yeah,
that's a great example.
Yeah, but when it drove into the wall, and there was a gaffer rolling a cigarette, I was like, can I have that? And he was like, yeah, do you smoke? And I was like, nope. I just need the blood pressure to go down. Felt good.
Yeah, that's rough. Never had a picture vehicle wreck, but certainly been on sets that I was producing, and the fucking, you know, the PA backed the fucking truck into someone's car. Yeah. So, or like the location owner's fucking car, who was already uptight about renting us the location. So I've had those moments where you're just like, you gotta be fucking kidding. Like, that was an instance too, where we were literally, it was like, we were taillights. It was the last vehicle leaving set. So at least thankfully it didn't start at the top of the day, because she was pissed off all day or kicking us out or something. But it's literally the last thing of the day. My fucking PA backs the fucking truck into the woman's SUV that we've been shooting at all day.
Brilliant.
It's just like, we were so close to getting out of here scot-free, and then this happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll go wrong, we'll go wrong. Right. We can go wrong.
Yes. Do you recall an instance of someone other than you having to overcome, I mean, the bus driver, it sounds like, maybe, having to overcome low-budget constraints? What was it, and how did they do it?
I mean, it was a really hard shoot. I mean, we got to our location one day, and it was like 5 a.m., and it was really cold, and our unit base, a cafe, the person lost the key, so we couldn't get in. So we all had to, like, Jillian's freezing in her wheelchair outside, and we're all like,
brutal.
Hair and makeup, can't do anything. Like, yeah, so, but everyone just...
Did you just pitch a tent and get to work outside, or...?
We just did what we could, pretty much, yeah. But it was just, like, brutally cold. So there was so much overcoming on the shoot. I mean, Jillian's wheelchair ran out of power one day, and we had to, like, get a car battery and charge it. The taxi fucking... This was hilarious after a shoot day. It got a flat battery as well, and I was pushing it down the street after, like, shooting for 16 hours.
This was Jillian's taxi?
It was just so funny. It was just like... She's got a funny video, but there was a lot of, like, logistical things that went wrong, and everyone was... Sometimes I think a small problem pulls the crew together.
Sure.
When I'm on a shoot and something, a little thing goes wrong, I actually love it. So I'm like, oh, we can overcome this. Right. Yay, go team.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of... It went...
Bigger things, yeah.
But everyone kind of had to overcome and, like, pull together. Yeah. Or
biggest mistake you personally made on the project to date?
Oh, my God. That's a really good question. I mean, I go to... There's a scene I'd like to put in, and it's so obvious to me now, and I can't believe I didn't think of it earlier.
So a writing miss?
So a writing...
Do you want to say what it is?
I would have a scene of them just flirting and just hanging out.
Okay.
And, like, no preachiness, no... And there were shots I missed. In the bedroom scene, I think we used every single shot I took. Not every take, obviously. But I could have... Because we were in such a rush, I should have held shots for longer. It's classic directing. Right. Like, cut, let's move on! And it's like, it's just... But the main one I wish I could change is I'd put in another scene of them just flirting.
Top.
That's the major one.
I kind of like that we just rip into it, but I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet you if I did it, people would be like, take it out.
Right. We don't need exposition. It's a short format.
Yeah. And even I might say that. But I mean, I'm learning all the time. I fucked up so much. Like, every scene, I was like, when I come to edit, I was like, oh, this isn't going to work. But we managed to find the jigsaw puzzle.
Amen.
Fuck up all the time.
Well, everybody, this shit is fucking hard. And to make it, not only is it difficult, but it is a completely free-form thing that there's no way to do it on rails, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all, you're constantly working in a fucking,
I was really scared, given the subject matter. Like I said, I'm a white, able-bodied, straight guy, that I'd do something wrong, say something wrong, like the character in the film does, or portray something wrong.
Goes without saying, having a writer that can speak to that firsthand and tell you whether you're fucking it up.
Exactly.
Was probably, I imagine, a clutch.
Need it. Yeah. And she was on set every day, and I'd be like, I'm going to shoot this, like, she was called a director's attachment. That's what I said about a disabled crew. She was with me all the time when we were storyboarding, when we were pre-visiting, all the stuff. And on set, she was with me. And I was like, I'm going to shoot it here. I'm going to have the camera at this light, at this height. Does that make sense? Because I want this feeling. She's like, no, don't do that. That's not the feeling. And that was like a cheat sheet for me.
For sure.
And also, like, I was so nervous about being a white savior.
Fucking that
asshole.
Up. Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. I did this with my third feature, maybe had a lot of really heavy drug abuse themes in it, and there was a really graphic overdose scene with heroin needle stuff, and I am pretty hardline on no drugs. I've been around it a lot, but don't have any firsthand experience. So yeah, same instance. It was very important to me, me and Shawnee, to find someone who had spent time in that world firsthand. And there was, I tried to get him to set. He wouldn't come to set, which I understand. But there was definitely a day, the day we were shooting that, I'm on the phone with him, like, okay, the spoon, this, doing, every single step, like making sure we're not doing that in a way where anyone's going to call us on that, because it was such a big part of, the film's whatever.
It's quite challenging as well, because it's quite challenging for me, because she, as a person, at times needed to look weak in the film, like when she's getting or out of sorts. But I also didn't want her to look weak because she's disabled. So even little things like her getting off the floor into her wheelchair, I was like, how the fuck do I shoot that so she looks like a strong, powerful woman? And in control. Well,
Cassie too, she's fucking amazing and like so badass, cool.
But there were real challenges about that, to like how to portray her being upset but not weak. But it was tricky.
I hear that. So having been through and learned much of what you will from this project, maybe all of what you will from this project at this point, other than this podcast experience, what is the thing coming out of it that you most wanted to do differently? And again, more time, more money, sure. But like something maybe a little more nuanced than that, that you identified as something on the next project. You're like, I'm going to fucking make sure that doesn't go that way next time or ever again.
It's quite interesting because it's a real obvious answer to me, but when you're making something and when you're doing a short, often you're working with a bunch of people you don't know, and so you don't have a shorthand with them, and this is awkward to talk about, but I hate being micromanaged, so I'd check in on people and make sure they're doing the thing and then leave them to it a bit. And then there are a couple of, and I don't want to speak ill, there are people amazing on this, but there were some people that weren't amazing on this. I feel bad for saying that, but that's the truth. And I needed to be over them a bit more, and I needed to be like, not everyone thinks like me, thank God, and not everyone works like me, thank God. But like, it's a real tricky thing, because I've heard crew being pissed off about being micromanaged all the time, and I'm like, it's not micromanaging, they just don't know you and don't trust you, that's it, and that's fine, like just let them, you have to gain their trust. So I would definitely be more, is there a better word than micromanaging? There's two words.
Just assertive about the working environment, and I think also maybe I was listening to that scene, which way exactly you were going to go, but I'm also kind of hearing there that being able to, ideally, maybe not always the case, depending on where you're shooting, whatever, you have to hire whoever you have available to you, and people have schedules of their own, and yada, 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 but hiring people that you do have that shorthand with already, and having a pool of people, I mean, I certainly, I am always trying to work with the same DP, I hire the same fucking sound guy, I'm always hiring the same group of people, if possible, because you know how you're going to get it,
exactly.
And that shorthand is critical for an already fucked up work environment,
This was, and it feels weird saying this, but just at the end of COVID, I don't know if you remember, but everyone was working. Like, it was hard to get crew.
Yeah, it fired up.
For a short film. Because it was like, we can't pay full rent. And they're like, I haven't worked for 2 years, so I'm going to go and work on this commercial.
Right.
So there wasn't a lot of choice. And then most, 98% of people were awesome. So, just being more, it sounds so obvious, just being more, especially at the beginning, managing people better.
Okay. Hear that. Closing thing, define the phrase independent filmmaking in your own words. What does it mean?
My brain just went to Independence Day,
very different.
It's a cool film, the first one.
Yeah.
Independent filmmaking, indie filmmaking, it's just It's like being in an indie rock band, like doing shit, raising money, getting an idea, building a team, and doing the thing. It's doing. Indie filmmaking is doing. It's
doing everything. Are you saying like just the multi, everyone wearing different hats kind of thing? Or are you saying just the act of like constantly driving something forward because no one else is going to?
All of the above. I mean, if ideally you'd have a big, it's like punk rock, you know, it's like fucking, I want to make this thing, I don't have all the ability, but I'm just going to do the best I can. And also I think it shows so much potential. But sometimes you don't have the technical know-how or whatever, but you can see the intent and you're learning. So indie filmmaking is just like cutting your teeth and fucking doing it, you know?
Okay, work.
And scary as fuck.
It can't be. You do it enough times. That's because what I love about, you know, the reason that I have stuck doing this shit, even though at times it's certainly not the most profitable thing. I know I could be making more money with the shit I went to school for. There's no question about that. The thing that keeps me in it and going forward with it is, one, when the things go really right and you really are proud of what they are, that's of course incredible. But also just the changing. It's the change. Everything, every day is different. Every project is a completely new problem set you have to navigate in a completely new way. Even the dependable parts that, okay, I got this part turnkey, I know how to do this, and I can kind of match that every time. Even that is going to not go exactly the way it did on another project. And that's what I really love about it, and I think keeps me fucking going in it for sure.
That's awesome.
That's kind of it, man. I mean, you know, I have shit on here. Follow the project. I'll put all that stuff in the posts and stuff. So you don't got to tell us. And the thing is, there anything other than this project that'll obviously be in all the stuff I put out for it that you would want to talk about? Stuff coming down the pipe.
Well, I'm going home after this to finish a feature script.
Okay.
I've been working on for years. It's quite scary finishing it.
Now you have to do the
writing's hard, but
writing is very hard.
And we are talking about turning this into a feature, but I'm shrugging. Audibly shrugging. Who knows what will happen?
So it's a short concept.
No, the short. So the script that I'm going to finish now, completely different.
Okay.
And then we're talking to BBC about getting some money to develop My Eyes Are Up Here into a feature film.
Oh, okay.
This is so much content, man.
For sure, man.
I'm gonna try and do that.
I definitely want to know more about whether it works or not. You know, because she's so hard ass about.
Yeah. She's and hoping to work with the same actors.
Sure.
So I've got a meeting tomorrow morning actually about that. So.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's pretty cool to hear.
Yeah, but who knows? Like, you know.
Yeah,
what it's
of
like.
Course, right? Yeah. All the uncertainty in the world with this shit. Like I said, it's a hobby, not a business.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, cool, man. Well, thank you. This was cool.
Thank you, man. Thanks.
You can watch Nathan's film, My Eyes Are Up Here, on the Filmmaking the Hard Way Filmmaker Spotlight website at nyehentertainment.com/spotlight, or by hunting it down on the Nyeh YouTube channel. Links to both those destinations will be in the show notes, along with links to the rest of Nathan's work. Thanks for listening.